Are you busy?
I'm guessing you're busy. I know I'm busy. I'm guessing you're busy too. If you're wondering how you're going to get everything done, Factor can make your life easier by removing one stressful item from your to-do list. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you eat well for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle. Cross meal prepping off your list with Factor. Skip the meal planning, grocery shopping, chopping, prepping, and cleaning up, and get Factor's fresh, never frozen meals delivered to your door. They're ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Treat yourself to high quality, delicious meals. Choose from over 35 chef crafted meals every week that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, whether it's calorie smart, vegan and veggie, protein plus, and other wholesome options. Looking for other calorie conscious options that don't skimp on flavor? Try delicious dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. Or if you need an extra boost to support your wellness goals, try protein plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. And Factor is not just about dinner. Count on extra convenience any time of the day with an assortment of over 55 add-ons to suit various preferences and tastes. You have quick breakfast items. You have lunch to go. You have grab-and-go snacks, ready-to-drink cold-pressed juices and smoothies. Get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. So head to factormeals.com/BA2022POD50. And use that code BA2022POD50 to get 50% off. That's code BA2022POD50 at factormeals.com/BA2022POD50 to get 50% off. Shakes.
Two-two pitch. Swing and a long drive.
All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast, the first of 2024. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I am here, as always, with my co-host, the reigning NFBC main event co-champion, Dylan White. What's going on, man? How are you? How were the holidays up there in Canada?
They were good. It was not a white Christmas. It was a muddy Christmas, literally. Yeah, I don't know. The time flew by. It was relaxing, but I'm exhausted today. First day back at work and catching up on emails, all that stuff, and very tired. So not recuperative, but relaxing. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah, that makes sense. I totally get it. I was away from writing for most of the last week. I did happen to write up the Chris Sale Von Gershom trade, which we can talk about in a moment. But I think most of my time just kind of spent with, you know, family, doing Christmas stuff, playing on the PlayStation 5 that my kids received from us for Christmas. Yeah, it was a good time. So it was nice to get back into it, I guess, a little bit today and, you know, ease back into it. It doesn't really get real busy for me again until spring training kicks off. So this is the fun time of year. I'm thinking about fantasy baseball. You know, I'm looking at my fantasy teams, thinking about moves I could make, keepers, got FYPD coming up. We're obviously doing our rankings. So that's where a majority of my attention's been, and just been, you know, digging through numbers and, you know, scouring Twitter in the shadows and reading tweets and articles and such. I saw there's a new updated version of the process for 2024 from you know, Zimmerman, Tanner Bell. Always a very good book to read. So anyway, Dylan, if there's anything else we can talk about, let's talk about the trade here. Let's talk about Chris Sale going to the Atlanta Braves. In return, Von Gershom goes back to the Red Sox. The Red Sox also send some money with Chris Sale. From a real life baseball perspective, I like the deal for both teams. I hadn't realized this, but the Red Sox have not had a second baseman who's played over 100 games at second base, I believe, since Dustin Pedroia in 2016. I believe, wow, 2016 was the year. It might even been 2014. It's been quite a while since the Red Sox have had a consistent second baseman after having one for a good, you know, a good decade or so. So yeah, I guess, you know, I think for them, this is a good move. This is a player that I think we both believe can hit in the major leagues. Has shown some glimpses of that. Good contact skills. The approach is good. It's good balance of, you know, aggression and patience. The underlying power data gives me hope that there's more power there, particularly if he can get out in front of the ball and drive the ball a little bit more. If he starts to get into his pull side power, you know, just we have access to some of these launch angles. Pull launch angle was like dead even. It was about a zero. If he could start to get into the ball, you know, to his pull side as a right-handed hitter in Fenway Park, Grisham is, you know, Grisham is going to hit some homers. He's going to hit some doubles. And I think he can play. The big question with him has always sort of been, where does he fit defensively? He's not a shortstop. You know, I think he probably can be fine at second base. You know, he's a bigger guy, 6'3", you know, 200, 210, somewhere around there, broad shoulders. So he's a different kind of build than you would anticipate. He's like a bigger bodied shortstop. He's not super twitchy. I always thought he was kind of a third baseman. The arm probably isn't there. We'll see how it goes at second, but you know, there's no reason. I think Chris Cotillo might have said this in one of his articles yesterday or the day before. There's no reason for them not to give him a long leash there. And I agree with Chris. I think that there's no one in the organization that's really going to push him out. He probably should get an opportunity to be the first second baseman for the Red Sox since 2016 or whatever, since Dustin Pedroia to play 100 games. That wouldn't shock me. So this, I think it's a good move for them. They obviously get the length of his career. If he turns out to be an above average, you know, offensive regular at second base, this is a huge win for the Red Sox. Conversely, Chris Sale, I think, was a guy who, when he was on the mound last year, was pretty good. The underlying numbers were really good. The ERA estimators were really good. They were all in like the mid threes or somewhere around there. He was over 10K per nine. The walks were right in line with what we typically see from Chris Sale. The fastball velocity really over this injured stretch since 2018 really hasn't fluctuated, funny enough. Some of his pitch usage has and some of that, but I think there's still a pretty good pitcher here. There is some question, just talking to a few analysts around the game with teams, just what their thoughts were on this trade. There is some concern about the level of damage he's giving up on contact at this point in his career. But I think when you're talking about the second lefty in a rotation, your number four starter, Sale to me really just fits in perfectly with what they have going on there. He's a competitive guy. The Red Sox are taking a step back. They should have done that the last 2 years. It looks like they're taking a more deliberate step back, trying to acquire players with, you know, longer team control, et cetera, cheaper contracts, players that could turn into something. Because I think they realize that they are sort of in this weird place in this rebuild, so to speak. And I don't know if Chris Sale would have necessarily been the best fit. So getting him out of there, getting a player in return that you have some runway with, I think is a great option for both teams. From a fantasy perspective, Dylan, I'll kick this over to you. I think both players benefit greatly here, but you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I think their value does go up for sure. Just Sale moving to the powerhouse Braves. The concern with Sale is he over the hill and is his arm going to hold up? Like, that still is the question, but it's better to be pitching for Atlanta while figuring that out than pitching for Boston. So his value goes up for sure. I kind of plugged in the projections now as of today into my spreadsheet, and he is like the 18th starting pitcher using my – or 20th starting pitcher using my it's basically Z-scores with a little bit of some tweaks. So he's right in like the Logan Gilbert, Grayson Rodriguez area, Zach Gallen even, Jesus Luzardo. So that's the expected value he's going to give, not ADP. He's worth it at 140 innings. It looks like his value has gone up. Vaughn Grissom, same thing. His value goes up too because it was a big question. What was he going to do for Atlanta? You know, they're talking about maybe left field. And then is it going to be a platoon with Jared Kelenic? What's happening? it was never really clear what the Braves' idea was with Vaughn Grissom. And now, obviously, like you said, he's probably going to have a lot of leash at second base for Boston. So just having that playing time is obviously going to be good. Plugging into the same spreadsheet, second base, I have him kind of in the, where is he here? About 20th second baseman. And that's not even completely fully accurate because, like, I don't have Mookie Betts under second base and a couple guys that could also play short, or like Rengifo, who has a bunch of positional variability, he's in there too. So it's not exactly right, but he's, you know, 20th second baseman. So probably your best bet is having him at middle. And that's just based on the projections, right? That's not thinking that there is upside, all that. That's just what Steamer is saying right now, and what they're saying with his playing time. So if you believe that they're maybe underreporting him because, you know, he had maybe a lost season last year and he's getting unfairly dinged, then yeah, you know, pick Vaughn Grissom, draft him a lot higher. He's kind of in the Zach Geloff range, which kind of surprised me because I thought Geloff had a better projection. But I guess the better counting stats, the better, like, more home runs, more stolen bases from Geloff is being counterbalanced by the sort of the batting average OBP thing of Vaughn Grissom. So I don't know. Maybe that kind of gives a good idea of, like, how you can weigh Grissom's maybe 12 home runs, 12 stolen bases kind of thing. But maybe at 275 batting average, possibly, with someone who's like 250 with 2020. So it's kind of similar value.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. We might have to update our second base rankings that we're going to discuss today, because we did have Grisham listed as a shortstop because, you know, he did not play all that many games at second base last year. I think even in AAA, it's about 30 games. He's got under 100 career games at second base, you know, and played 18 in the majors at short and 70 in AAA at short last year. So we'll have to make a little tweak here because they have said that he's going to be the second baseman. So yeah. There's not much question there. Well, maybe not like officially, but that he will be playing second base. So we'll have to tweak that. You know, we'll see where he fits into these rankings. But a couple other just quick signings here. Frankie Montas to the Reds, Lucas Giolito to the Red Sox, Mitch Garver to the Mariners. I guess, what are your thoughts here on the two pitchers, and how much is Mitch Garver going to cloud the catching situation with our friend old Sir Cal Raleigh up there in Seattle?
I don't think it's going to hurt Cal Raleigh's playing time. I don't think. I think Garver, his days as a catcher are, as a primary catcher, are not really happening anymore, I don't think. I think he's going to be more DH, and he might get enough at catcher to qualify for the next year. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it's going to really hurt Cal Raleigh that much. I think the park isn't the greatest for Garver. I think moving from the Rangers lineup to the Seattle lineup, I know he was a free agent, but that's going to hurt him a bit. But I really like Garver. I mean, his batted ball metrics are always really good. He always shows up high on my my spreadsheets for, like, the exit velocities and the contact and barrel rates and all that stuff. So I like the move. Interestingly, though, the pre-trade and post-trade projections in that same spreadsheet I was talking about under the 15-team batting average parameters, he does go up, but only a bit, and it's mostly just because of playing time.
Actual at-bats.
Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't even that much. It wasn't that, you know, we don't know how many he's going to play, call it 250, and then now it's 400, and he should skyrocket. He barely moved the needle, actually, in terms of dollar value on my spreadsheet. So I'm glad he has a role. Looks like it's going to be full-time. I have him in a dynasty league as my catcher, so I'm very happy about that. In terms of the pitchers, Giolito and to the Red Sox and Montas to Cincinnati, funnily enough, their value goes down from pre-signing to post-signing, where if you just take, like, the Steamer 600 and then just assume that they're going to get, you know, neutral innings, 110 innings for Montas type of thing, or 160 or whatever it is for Giolito, at a neutral site with neutral offensive backing them up to get wins, they had a higher higher value than where they've landed now. Like Giolito has gone down a little bit. Montas has gone down quite a bit, obviously, because of Cincinnati Great American Ballpark. He's barely, like, he's like $2 now, where he was kind of like $9 beforehand at a neutral park and neutral team. So I'm happy again. Also, I have Montas as well. I'm happy that he has a team, and so he's going to be in the rotation, and he's, you know, got a role. But, you know, Cincinnati may not be the best place for him to land in terms of his rate stats. But, you know, with that team and their offense that's in ascendance, maybe he'll get some wins that he may not have otherwise had on, you know, on the Royals or something.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll see. You know, it's not impossible either of these guys rebuild some value. We've both seen pitchers have good seasons with these teams. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. They're not great gambles, though. They're not somebody that you're drafting with excitement. I feel like you're kind of backing into a corner at the bottom of a tier when you're taking either of these guys and being like, all right, you know, I'm crossing my fingers and kind of jumping off the bridge or whatever. So good luck. But no, I think, you know, the leagues are deep enough. You know, the right format, both of these guys are obviously players that you might gamble on. I think I'm a little bit more interested in what Montas can be. But that shoulder injury obviously is a major question mark. Giolito has pitched the innings over the recent seasons. The health has not been an issue. He just really has not been productive in a few seasons now. And the majority of his career, if you look at the numbers, you know, over the course of his entirety of his career, he's been pretty mediocre outside of a year or two. So I don't know how much I want to gamble on that. We'll see. You know, certainly he's a guy that's been open to trying different things and you know, tweaking stuff. And we'll see. We'll see if it's something that can work out. But that being said, Dylan, let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to jump in on the second half of the show, talking some second base ranks. What do you say?
Let's do it.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match them, thanks to Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's why we use Indeed here at Baseball America when we're looking to hire. It makes hiring easier, and it gives us excellent candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by the way, you're supporting our show by doing so by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we are back. All right, Dylan. The top of the second base position hasn't looked this good in a long time. Mostly because Mookie Betts is now a second baseman. There hasn't been like a top 5 to 10-ish player at second base like this in a while. And, you know, here you go. I mean, easy first rounderish type, especially for me at second base. Roster him in a dynasty league. Drafting him as an outfielder a few years ago and now having that like second base shortstop eligibility even last year was pretty remarkable. I just wish that team was a little bit better so I could have taken advantage of that. But he's playing second base going forward. That's going to be his position, it seems. There's not much to say about Mookie Betts. The offense gets better with Shohei Ohtani. Team looks good. He's obviously been incredibly productive in a good Dodgers lineup, but not great. And it's going to get even better this year. There's not a whole lot to say here. I think when you go through the top five, a lot of familiar faces. Ozzie Albies at 2, Marcus Semien at 3. Jose Altuve at 5. I held out number 4, Matt McClain. Mm-hmm. He's the newbie here. I'm high in McClain. Obviously, you are as well for him to land 4 in our in our combined rankings. I know it's not a full season sample size that we have so far at the major league level. The more I dug in, the more I look at the numbers, the more I look at the year-over-year numbers, albeit minor league data even, there were substantial changes with McClain in terms of improvement on plate skills, but also underlying exit velocity and contact on his and angles on his best contact were more positive. So just a variety of sort of attributes and things that came together here for McClain to have this sort of breakout season. There's still some swing and miss, and there's still some stuff to be concerned about potentially, but where do you stand on McClain? You know, obviously multi-position eligibility entering the year, whether he keeps that or not, it's a different story.
Yeah, I really like McClain. I was not really on McClain before last year. Definitely a miss on my part. But he was definitely impressive. He was the number three ranked AAA hitter per RoboScout. Like you said, he kind of improved his contact, his 90th percentile exit velocity. His chase rate stayed about the same, but his barrel rate went up. He has the second base and shortstop eligibility. He played good shortstop. They liked his bat, even when there was sort of a glut of offensive options. He would kind of hit second or third in that lineup, and so I can't imagine that's going to change much. I have him on my personal ranks. I have him ahead of Semien. So I see a lot of good things. He's only going to be 24, I believe, heading into the season. Great ballpark, great lineup, confidence from the team, good defense. I have his peak very similar to Semien's peak, except McClain's going to, you know, age into his peak, and Semien's going to only kind of decline from here on out, being 33. So, I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting philosophical discussion. Where are you in your window? If you're a win now and, you know, this might be your last year to try, you'd probably prefer Semien. If you have the opportunity to wait, if you're kind of a competitive team, but you don't have to push your chips in yet, you know, you'd probably want the Matt McClain over the Semiens or even the Altuves. So, yeah, I have them all in that same ballpark. And I think it's kind of nice the way that kind of falls out that, you know, depending on where you are in the window, you can take either guy that's, you know, right back to back on our list.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'll also say this, I think there's a lesson here with Matt McClain, and that is like sort of never to say never with prospects who do have some pedigree, who do have some opportunity, you know, that do have an investment from an organization. And I don't think you were wrong. I think this is the lesson here is these are human beings. They evolve, they de-evolve. Players get better, they get worse. They don't stay on that same trajectory, even when they're in the major leagues. There's so many other sort of like factors that come into play. McClain's a guy that showed the ability to get focused on a certain area, make those adjustments, turn it into tangible skills, and of course that, you know, turned into opportunities and production. And that's what it's all about, is guys like this that sort of have that makeup and that mentality that can make those adjustments and sort of take things to the next level. I could tell you, you know, firsthand, having some experience with McClain family, that's just sort of a trait that they all have. And he's, you know, of the three brothers, I believe Matt is probably the best athlete. So, you know, he's probably going to be a pretty good runner for, I think, a little bit of time. You know, I'm not too worried about the stolen bases going away entirely. You know, 14 last year over 89 games, you know, 10 in AAA as well at 27 the season before that. So, you know, I think like 15 to like maybe 20 stolen bases in his high years isn't crazy. But I think in that lineup, he's going to hit near the top of it. And there is run upside. And I think that's the one thing that gives me pause with maybe a player like McClain or a younger player versus a Semien, even in like a startup dynasty draft, there's so much like run floor with Semien. Like, you know, you're going to get 90 runs, I think, even if he has a down year or misses some time. I feel like you can plug in those 90 runs and feel real comfortable about it and all the things that come along with that. And I think if you're constantly chasing that run number, most of the time, everything else will take care of itself. You'll have some speed, you'll have some power, just kind of how it works. But yeah, that's one of those guys that I do. I understand the philosophical debate, especially if like you were complete rebuild. Obviously it's McLean. I think I actually have a dynasty team where I drafted this offseason where I have both of them. So why not both, I guess, is my expression there. You brought up Jose Altuve a little bit here. You know, obviously kind of a disjointed season, fractured his thumb in the World Baseball Classic, you know, missed more than a month because of that, returns mid-May, you know, is back for 32 games, oblique injury, misses more time. But those final 58 games here, you know, July 26th on, kind of got that vintage Altuve, hit 335, 404, 544 with 11 home runs over that 58-game stretch. That gives me some hope that we could sort of get one of those classic sort of second half of Altuve career type of seasons. Not the speedster without the power, but the guy with the power and the batting average and the solid on base skills. And I believe he's going into a contract year as well. So, you know, he might be looking to splash it one more time. So what are your thoughts here on Altuve? I actually really like him as a redraft player this season.
Yeah. I mean, I love Altuve. He has like sort of the highest WRC plus projection of those three that we're talking about, and also higher than Glaber and Ozzie Albies. So, at face value for redraft, he's almost like arguably one of the top two other than Mookie Betts, second baseman to draft in redraft. It's just the age thing for dynasty is, you know, you just got to ding him a bit. Even though he's projected for 3.5 war. And so that means he'll probably make 3 war the year after, et cetera, which is still obviously an excellent player. And so he's not in a decline phase such that he's not rosterable in the near future. That's definitely not true. He's going to be very good for quite some time. I have him like number 3, well, number 4, if you can't Moogie, on my personal rank. So I believe in the bat, the short Porsche Crawford boxes for Houston obviously helps him a lot. And that's great. You can take advantage of that. High WRC plus, going to be at the top of the order, plug him in for 90 runs, like you said, with Semien, like he's definitely got an extremely high floor. Yeah, I mean, I love Altuve, no question.
Yeah, and I think he's an older player that could still have some productive time left. Guess sort of quick fire names here I'm going to throw at you, Dylan, if I might. Putting you in the hot seat here. Going with some players outside the top 25, Davis Schneider. I know you're a big Schneider believer. You're also a Blue Jays fan. The way things sort of stand right now, I think there might be some opportunity for Schneider to play every day. What are your thoughts on that? And do you believe, not that he's going to replicate that end of season flurry, but do you think that he could build on that a little bit and be an above average contributor from a fantasy perspective, regardless of what he contributes defensively?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think his WRC plus projection because of his great AAA and then like the otherworldly first 25 games, that debut, is very high. It's one of the highest ones of any of the second basemen. It's just more, will he get the playing time? His defense isn't the greatest. So is he going to, you know, be plugged in as be a full-time player? Not sure. I have him in a couple dynasty leagues, of course. How could I not? The Kaider Falefa signing by the Jays probably affects him in some way. That's what I feel, but you know, maybe it doesn't. Like Schneider is going to be playing second, if anywhere. I don't think he's going to be in the outfield. I don't think he's going to be in third. He may eventually be left field. I'm not sure, but I think second base is his best spot. Maybe Kaider Falefa is not going to be there. So maybe I'm just overthinking it, but I do like Schneider. I think as a dynasty asset, I think his bat is going to shine and it'll eventually be one of those things where, he will play himself into full-time playing time over the next couple of years, unless they make some huge splash signing of a, you know, a second baseman or something. and there's nowhere for Schneider to play. But I do think his bat's going to get him into the lineup. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm a big David Schneider fan. I believe in, you know, average bat-to-ball skills, probably plus approach. His on-base skills are excellent. And then the power, you know, it's sort of average-ish, but he makes contact at great angles. So he's constantly getting more out of his power than maybe he even should. And it's not like it's just sort of average power. You know, it's not that it's like super fringy or something like that, where you're like questioning whether there's strength here. I think that he does hit the ball hard enough to hit for some power and consistently be productive. So should be interesting. All right, let's wrap it up here with one more name I'm going to throw at you. We just snuck into the back here. Chase Meidroff over Luis Angel Acuña. I don't even know if this is controversial any longer. I think people are a little bit off Luis Angel Acuña, and I don't necessarily blame him. I think that he's a good player. He'll be a major leaguer. I think some of the hype around Acuña has been built up because of who his brother is.
And who is that? I agree. I think his defense is
Ronald
Senior. I think that I agree. I have Acuña ahead of Meidroff on my own personal ranks, but I totally understand him dropping down. His WRC plus projection is not very good, even at peak, and that will affect his playing time unless he's incredible defensively. I don't think he's incredible defensively. He will get stolen bases, though. So from a fantasy perspective, he'll probably still put up value. He'll probably have multi-positional eligibility, I think. He's still very young, so there's a lot that can happen that we're just talking about with Matt McClain. I think he was being overrated. Now I think maybe he's getting underrated, undervalued, because I have seen a lot of negativity online about him. Maybe it's a good buying opportunity, as long as you don't set your expectations too high, that maybe someone you can take advantage of someone being like, oh, I better get out from underneath of Acuña here, get him as a throw in some trade or whatever. Meidroff, I mean, he's a very divisive prospect, as we know. I think he kind of settled into sort of like an average performer across the board, with maybe less power than average, but, you know, solid batting average, solid on base, a handful of steals, maybe not quite double digits, but, you know, like 7-9 type of thing.
Sure.
Probably you'll get multi-position eligibility as well. So, you know, a nice little player, but not someone that you want to like target to make sure you get onto your team, in my opinion.
I think there's some quantish qualities here, though, where there's bats of ball skills and there's good approach. He's good enough defensively at third base, frankly. Can play a little second base, maybe shortstop if you're really stretched, but you probably don't want to do that for a long period of time. Boston trains bat speed well. It's something that they have a big focus on. You know, Jason Oakhart, driveline, you know, sort of their first hitting guru back in the day was with the Phillies. Now it's been with the Red Sox for a couple of years. I know that's a point of emphasis. If you read some of our Red Sox reports, they'll be coming up the top 30s. I've already read the handbook, so I already know all the things they're going to publish online soon. But with that knowledge and foresight of the future and the information, Meidroff has been working on bat speed, etc., adding some impact. I'm kind of interested because if he's a guy that you can get to like average impact, right? Like a 50 power guy in terms of homers, that becomes kind of interesting to me. You know, I personally think he has passed Nick York.
Nick York.
Without much of a question there. And yeah, you know, he's divisive for a reason. I think at points in time, you know, he's had some hype, but there has been production there. There's no doubt. And I think if you look at the underlying skills and you say, hey, if this guy could add some impact, even be average, that's a pretty useful player and somebody that could get up to Boston, you know, and maybe get an opportunity to play, you know, a few different positions, probably not second base, because as we said, it's probably going to be Vaughn Grisham. Maybe he can play a little third and, you know, go from there. But I do think he's an interesting player there. I think he has as much of an opportunity to be a solid contributor from a fantasy perspective as Acuña does, just in a different way. So there you go. Look at me. I'm a little bit more on Chase Meidrauf than I was a year ago. But never disliked the player. I just think the expectations. But he's, you know, he's at the back end of our list for what it's worth. So there you go. Dylan, anything else you wanted to say about second base before we wrap this up? And we'll move on to third base next week.
No, that's all good. I think it's a pretty deep position. I like the five guys at the top. But there's a lot of depth at the second base, and third base is maybe even deeper and maybe even better too. So that's a little teaser for what's to come in the podcast next week.
All righty. Well, there we have it. Another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you keep tuning in. Subscribe to baseballamerica.com. We got a ton of fantasy content coming out for you. Of course, the 2024 Prospect Handbook with 30 scouting reports on prospects from all 30 teams. That's 900 total scouting reports. That will be available shortly. You can buy it online. You get your digital copy first. Then you'll get the hard copy. Within the next few weeks, you'll have a lot of information to dig through, read through. There you go. But we appreciate you guys listening, liking, subscribing, all that good stuff. Have a great start to your 2024.